faith in the energy crisis. And as I think of it, this is the Church of Jesus Christ attending to our world, to our life together. I like the notion of attending to or attending our world. It's very difficult for us to attend to anything. And it's impossible for us to attend to everything. And I think we need various members of our congregations that attend to different things and then share with us. Now, attending to anything means to focus. And that means to shut out some of the things for the sake of others. I think by analogy of life here at Holden, we simply cannot attend to everybody, or we don't attend to anybody. And there's so many people to attend to. We have a choice. And I think it's a choice in life. And I decided about 6 months ago to attend to energy. And I hope that some of you may decide to attend to it. And what that means, of course, is simply begin to think about it, read about it, and begin to collect literature about it and go to meetings about it and just attend to it without any great intention, but with a kind of responsibility. Now, I think I've referred before some of you to Mankind at the Turning Point, which is in the bookstore, and The Time to Choose, which is a Ford Energy Report. And then I have two books there that are really textbooks, but they're excellent books. And these are the kind of books that you have to kind of read day by day. There's so much in them. But one is Richard Wilson and William Jones, The Energy, Ecology, and the Environment. And another is Wilson Clark, Energy for Survival. Then I brought today this really a propaganda sheet called Critical Mass. But it's really an anti-nuclear energy, anti-nuclear power propaganda organization. But if you want to know what's going on, and if you want to know what reports are being made, it gives it this second issue, and there are only two, so that you can get in on the ground floor. It costs $6 a year. But it's a way of attending to what is going on and being aware. What is the energy crisis? I summarize the energy crisis by saying that it is a shortage in the supply of fossil fuels. And I noticed that the manager of the Shell Oil Refinery was speaking to our conservation club yesterday, said that we are now out of the fossil fuel age. It's over. We have to move towards something else. And there is a shortage of fossil fuels, and there's no way that I know of, or that even a person who's in the industry knows of, to maintain fossil fuels as a source of our energy supply. A second crisis has developed because of the effect on the environment of the use of energy, of the growing use of energy. A third element of the crisis is the dependency, a political problem, our dependency on oil-producing countries and shut off our energy and cause a crisis. We actually have enough oil stored, I suppose, for 30, 60 days. And if there's a great shutdown of oil coming in from other countries, it creates a crisis for us. If 40% of our fossil fuel, of our oil, is imported, it creates a great crisis for us. So that sense of political dependency. And fourth, I think there's a crisis in the style of life. We simply cannot advocate an extension of our style of life to China, for example, with 800 million people, or India with 600 million people. There's a real crisis in the meaning of our style of life if you can't export it, if it isn't universalizable, if it's just for us. We Christians have a hard time if the kind of style of life that we have is not for human beings, just for us. Now, we've been asking some questions. The immediate questions are, first, should we build any more nuclear power stations? And my answer has been no. Should we develop the liquid metal fast breeder reactor, which is a particular kind of nuclear power reactor? And my answer is no. And some of you know that the reasons that I have given have to do with the possibility of accidents, which are not great, but still are there, with the possibility of sabotage, with the fact that the radioactive materials can be stolen and used to make bombs, or simply converted into powder and put in a ventilating system and kill everybody within any building that you want to use. And finally, the problem is with the waste products. There's no way I know to dispose of the radioactive material that is safe. Of course, the real reason is that I think there are much less dangerous alternatives, and I don't know why we take this dangerous alternative if there is something else that can be done. The third question was, should we develop a program to conserve energy? And yesterday we talked about that, and I said yes. The program that's advocated by the Ford study, the main elements of it is that we have an energy sales tax rising to 15 cents of all dollars used, which will make energy less used, of course. Second, that we use that money to provide services for those who are affected by the sales tax. Third, that we increase auto gas mileage up to 33 miles a gallon, which would be required by 1985. And fourth, that we insulate our buildings. Now, there are many other things, but these savings, with a few other things, these savings would make it possible for us to reduce the amount of energy that we will be using by 2000 by 86%. And I used a figure yesterday of 187 quadrillion BTUs is over against 100 quadrillion BTUs. With virtually the same GNP, we have a choice. That is, to reduce the amount of energy that we're using without radically affecting the gross national product. In fact, it will grow and grow and grow under this conservation program. And it really seems incomprehensible to me why a people who see this as an alternative will not adopt it. That is, of course, of this energy conservation program are many. They're not only that we don't have to develop nuclear energy, but they'll reduce the amount of pollution. If you think of what it would take to increase our energy usage and to under some programs, and I have the diagrams here, in which there'd be an increase of the use of fossil fuel, the pollution problems continue. Now, today I wanted to talk about the alternative. There's much less assurance about the alternative to nuclear energy than I'd like to have. And I'm not really, I don't know as much about it as I do about nuclear energy. But I know enough, and there's enough written about it, to indicate that there are several alternatives. So the long-run question is, what kind of energy should we develop? And then, I don't think we'll have a session tomorrow, but on Friday I'll talk about two questions. Should we use as much energy as we do? And how can we turn the country around regarding its use of energy, both with regard to conservation programs and regard to the underlying values that are affected? We'll probably have to deal with all of that on Friday. Okay, then, the question today is in what direction we should move. Now, since we didn't get much chance to discuss last time, maybe you want to say something about this initial thrust. The development of alternatives presupposes that you at least know what's involved in the development of alternatives, and the pouring of a lot of money into it is over against following the courses that we are following now. So that if you don't take the first two steps, if we don't take the first two steps, seems to me we're not going to go very fast toward the alternative sources. but people are developing. Well, I thought I'd give you a little chance to talk about those first two propositions, namely that we ought to give up the building of any new nuclear energy power stations, and that we ought to institute immediately a federal program to conserve energy.
I have heard here in other places, you know, the environment with building plant with these and I have not ever accepted that that's a balance kind of argument so temporary. I don't know if people consider that as an argument for building plants or what, but
well, under the Ford Conservation Program, their estimates are that the problem of employment will not be the problem. Because you can have a conservation program, and since you're going to have a rising GNP, gross national product, you're going to have a rising demand for products and for labor. So that I think it's like all arguments about anything that takes away the kind of immediate job. The question is whether that really is like tariffs. Anti-tariff, free trade, it's like technological change, all these, you can argue all the time, I think, that anything which can lose jobs immediately is going to have long-term effects on unemployment. It's an economic complex thing. I don't know enough about it to know how it works. And as you well know, nobody wants the present unemployment rate, but we haven't been able do anything about it, and various theorists say they could have done something about it if we had done things differently.
Is that Ford proposal the one that you're talking about? Does that contemplate any increase in energy, or is it just talking about not building nuclear? I guess I have a problem with how you go from now, 25 years in the future, without an increase in energy, without an effect on GNP.
Largely due to increased efficiency, and if you get your automobile to go 33 miles a gallon is over against 12, and you only travel, and they've got all the figures in there. I really just recommend that book as bedside reading, and just peruse it, because it really does develop the problems. It takes up these problems in terms of how you do it. What's the effect on this segment of industry? And they got all the industries categorized. What's the effect on this segment, that segment? See, the thing is, they do allow between now and 2000 for an increase of energy from about 75 quadrillion to 100 quadrillion. So that's an increase of 33%. And then it stabilizes. Then they say, let's keep it at that. But the program is designed in such a way that it gets more efficiency. So if you heat your home and it's insulated, you drive your car and you get three times as much mileage, and increase the efficiency in the use of energy in plants.
I'm really curious about the solar alternative. I guess I'd like to see the alternative parallel to one another for the one.
See, thus far I've only suggested a moratorium on nuclear power, so I haven't said we don't continue to work on it and research it and spend some energy and money on it. I haven't said we destroy the plants we've got.
Say hold.
I say hold. That gives us time, see. Now, I don't think anybody thinks that we're going to get an alternative in the near future. But you see, the Ford program doesn't depend on conservation and of leveling off does not depend upon an alternative in the near future. Depends upon an alternative in by 2000, so that we have time to, or even
conservation buys time,
or even buys time for the development. And I think it's important to realize that we don't need any, we really don't need much more energy than we got. We'd have to go some more coal and some more oil if we want to have this level of 100 quadrillion BTU by 2000. We have to go some more than we are now. But the question is whether we're going to, by 2000, have 86% more energy used. Now, if we go that way, we have to go nuclear power. We go the way we're going. There is no alternative to nuclear power. If we don't conserve energy, we will go nuclear power. There isn't any alternative. We don't have the technology. So the two are very closely connected. You can't say no to nuclear power unless you say yes to conservation. And that's why those two things are very closely tied together.
But saying yes to conservation doesn't mean that you say finally no to nuclear power.
No, it really...
It means you say yes to research.
Say yes to research, and really yes in a big way to research. Let's see, on one solar experiment, they spent $3 million, which is just a pittance. And this is a major idea for solar farms.
Maybe if they tried, if they got the idea of going to the sun, they would start exploring solar power.
Well, I wouldn't want to be near the sun, 5,000 degrees centigrade.
Oh, that might be a nice space.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to, because I think we need to really get in our minds what is involved in this choice about conservation. I think conservation is the key to the present. It's the key. If we can't get a program of conservation, in other words, our energy, I think if we get a program of conservation, of course, it's going to be difficult because the energy industry will not really go for it. Like the president or the manager of this Shell refinery who was speaking to Conservation Club yesterday. It was supposed to be the Conservation Club, but he talked about the limitations on the development of new sources of oil. That was what he talked about. He didn't talk about conservation at all. And we're not going to get conservation unless the people really ask for it.
Doesn't your conservation buys the time to do the research, and you really are expressing some rather profound confidence in technological research. In other words, you're opting against sort of blundering private enterprise for social planned technological investigation.
That's right. The broad decision is whether you're going to let the market determine the decision, so whether you're going to use make a political decision is over against the market decision. And the market, clearly the market is going to go for nuclear energy.
But the political decision is to really listen to and exploit the wisdom of technocracy.
Well, yes, not only technocracy, it's a combination. It will be to listen to the wisdom of energy conservation, which partly technocratic in the sense that you are aware of how much resources you have and of the limitations of those. So if you know that your fossil fuels are very limited, then you will tend to be for conservation if you're thinking in terms of wisdom. So it's a combination of long-term wisdom versus, it's just not technocracy that's functioning, because it is your responsibility somehow toward the future. There's no question in my mind that we have enough energy for the next 30 years using traditional sources. We could even use the oil up that fast. Particularly if we play the politics. What I'm really afraid of is that the politics of a dependency on imported oil in the long run will mean that we will get that oil regardless of what happens. If we continue to expand our dependency on foreign imports of oil in order to run our system, which will be absolutely essential in much greater percentage than now if we go the growth rate, that is up to 186 billion quadrillion BTUs, which is the way we're going. That is the way you will go if we don't do something. And there's no indication yet, there's no groundswell of interest in this. It's really a political problem for the people.
That's a real big job, because maybe Congress will deal with a conservation program, but it'll always be in connection with a compromise, another step, you know, like two steps. So it never just kind of drawing a line. It seems like they have to act in so many different spheres. See what I mean? Kind of like, I suspect.
The question is how crucial it becomes to us. You have Vietnam as a real illustration. Now, it took a long time, but I think it's comparable. I think the seriousness of this decision is comparable to Vietnam, and probably more important than Vietnam in the long run, because it's the kind of thing we can't pull out of. You can't pull out of this thing once you develop it. It's very difficult to go backwards. And if you once develop all the power and have all that lying around, I don't know how you're going backwards. You once develop all these nuclear power stations, and you let your economy develop without doing something about it. All the buildings that are built now, you see, should have certain requirements by virtue of which they don't use much energy. All the cars, you know, if you let the cars next year be built, then it's just putting off the decision. And then everybody has those cars, you can't do anything about those cars. So that I really feel it. I don't know why I feel it so strongly. Maybe it's because I tend to get in. I tend to go for things.
Just to clarify things for me. I mean, because I can see that it won't be a compromise stance in legislation either that is going to bring about what you think we need.
Well, compromise is better than nothing, and so I'm not one who calculates what you do simply in terms of results. If there's an issue, you. We didn't get very far in the freedom movement, but we tried, and who knows what reverberations came out of it during the 60s and up into the 70s.
But don't the solutions, or the beginning of the solutions, have to be global more than... Are you calling for a Western Hemisphere conservation thing? Are you calling for a global one? Are you calling for a United States one?
Well, on these issues, I tend to call for what we can do. And it's like the birth rate in India. I don't know anything we can do about the birth rate in India except provide India with an economic system which will make it maybe less difficult for people, you know, to live without having a dozen kids. More meaningful to live. I mean, that's the only thing I've heard that seems significant. So the problem is global, but it's quite different, of course, in China and India, with about one half of the population of the world. They haven't developed yet, and if you go on the long term thing, I'd say we need to provide a pattern that is viable in the long term. And we probably won't. But what's your alternative if you're a faithful person? But to try. See, I think maybe China or India will provide the pattern for the future, which will be a different kind of a technological development, much less of the big technology, much more labor-intensive probably, or a different cultural pattern. That's our only hope. I get into my pride. There's no hope for the future in our style of life that demands what it does out of the world, out of the earth, out of energy. Now, there is a possibility, and maybe we ought to go to that with enough investment, you could go to solar energy. So I guess that those who really buy into Western civilization would and who see the danger of nuclear energy would advocate conservation and would advocate solar energy and a lot of investment in solar energy, and then you could continue to grow. Now, where you get the capital for other countries and the rest of the world to pour into solar energy is a real problem. But in due time, their systems would develop resources and capital and be able to do it, and we might supply some of it. In fact, some of the proposals indicate that we ought to build solar energy plants in other countries in exchange for what we need. Quid pro quo. Solar power. Let's take the alternative now. The alternatives to nuclear power, they are available. There are some available. Solar power, that is what they call a solar farm, power from the rivers and seas, wind power, geothermal power, and what's called bioconversion. There are all kinds of bioconversions. It really means that you take the sun's energy that goes into vegetation and use it. You can use algae, or you can grow crops, or even grow trees, or you can use waste disposal. There's some proposal of using hydrogen fuel, and there's some proposals that use what they call sea thermal power. That is, they use the heat gradients to, I don't understand that, so don't ask me about that. But they use the heat gradients in the ocean, there's as much as 40 degrees difference in temperature, but that would cause movements. They use that to get the power. And there's some major work been done on solar farms, on large collecting devices to collect the sun's energy. And there's a lot of energy falling on the Earth. The incoming radiation is calculated to be, I don't know what all these figures are, 178,000 times 10 to the 12th. So that's billion, trillion, quadrillion, quintillion, 178 quintillion watts, which is a lot of power. And Club of Rome says you could collect this, about 1% of the Earth would need to be turned into solar farms. And this energy then, there are various devices to collect it, and they're working on those. All the energy that was used our space trips came out of solar energy. That is, everything that powered that ship after the takeoff and its initial flight came from the sun. Now that was fairly expensive, and that's one of the problems. They developed photocells that converted the light into electrical energy. And the photocells that were used on the satellites now are about 10% efficient. And only the most expensive cells reach this efficiency. So if you have 10% efficiency and 1/6 of the sunlight that reaches the uppermost part of the Earth's atmosphere gets through, then one calculation is that you get 1,000 megawatts. Megawatts is 1,000 kilowatts. So you get 1,000,000 kilowatts from 4 square miles. And that's a lot of territory. And 1,000,000 kilowatts is about the same as a nuclear station. So that the question is whether this can be developed. One writer talks about the fossil fuel plant at the Turkey Point near Miami, And they have 11 square miles in cooling ponds, the cool part of the cooling system, and the calculation is that with solar energy, you get 4.4 million watts on these 11 miles. So you get more energy on the same territory from a solar plant. There's another proposal for solar energy is to establish a satellite and by a series of reflectors to concentrate the light and develop current energy and then send that to Earth through a process which involves certain kinds of waves, certain kinds of rays. And they think they've got the technology to do that. It costs $20 billion, they estimate, to put this satellite in circulation, get it established. And of course it hasn't been developed or tried out. And we had several of these. There's certain problems, of course, that are involved in terms of the effect of cutting off that energy from the Earth. But these are all possibilities, see, and I judge from reading, from a very cursory reading of the material, that we are, with regard to solar energy, where we were with regard to nuclear energy about 20 years ago, 25 years ago, and that maybe that's too conservative an estimate. But now there are a lot of problems as to where you put these. In certain areas of the country, they have it all calculated out as to if you put it in the southwest, you get the most sunlight. If you so that certain places are better than others, and for example, in some of your interests in California, December, their code is you get 260 units, March 420, and June 730. And in somewhere like New York, you get 133, 35, 75. So that these have to do with the number of calories that are coming in per minute, per centimeter. But I'm convinced, and this is a kind of a faith in technology, I guess, that just like we developed the nuclear technology, we can develop it. Now I've got the problem of the cost. And the little I've done convinces me that the costs are not going to be prohibitive. One estimate was that it would cost us about twice as much. You pay about 4 or 5 cents a kilowatt for your electricity. And the initial costs vary with solar energy between 5 and 9 mils per kilowatt. Of course, that doesn't take into account transportation and all the rest of it. They say that's about twice what it costs otherwise. I saw one estimate which was 2 mils for a nuclear station. Well, say it costs you twice as much for your energy. That is your electrical energy. That would be a fairly large bill for the plant. That would be a great increase in cost. And so it would reduce our standard of living. So one of the questions is, I think, at least right now, I would say we could probably put these into use at about twice the cost of electricity.
Now?
Well, that's a very, very uneducated guess. Just reading over some of the people who surveyed the material and seemed to have thought about it. And, but it would involve, of course, the investment, and who is going to invest in such energy resources when you have cheaper energy resources. So that what has to happen is that experimental stations are built, just like they were for nuclear power, by the government. Or somehow or other, we have to get the money and the willingness to experiment in order get this developed. And the writer who was talking about the cost of $20 billion said that one of the first nuclear developments cost $20 billion. That is, that we invested that kind of money in the nuclear, nuclear energy when we were working on the bomb. And of course, all that money that we spent on working on the bomb provided the background. So our electricity, nuclear electricity, is not cheap. I mean, it comes to us as a result of a great deal of subsidies. And the question is, how do you get this kind of subsidy for nuclear energy? Now, nuclear energy is only one kind of energy, and it's the one I know the most about, but let me just give you a couple of other things here. The National Science Foundation and the National Aeronautics and Space Administration established a panel to discuss the conversion of waste. And they said that by 2020, we could get 30% of our gas needs, that is a gaseous fuel, from the conversion of waste, and 10% of our liquid fuel from conversion of waste. That's an estimate, of course, in terms of what the needs will be, so the percentages are very rough, and I don't know what figures they used. I haven't seen the study to figure the 30 and the 10%. But that's very significant. If you can get that much of your needs from the conversion of waste disposal, which is a problem for us anyway. Now, the other thing I've spent some time thinking about and reading about is geothermal energy. And what happens there, and there is already an experiment in this. The water is pumped down into the earth until it reaches places where it's hot, and then it forms steam and comes back up, and you've got your steam. And there are all kinds of problems that are suggested with what happens underneath when you blast or you drill holes down there in order to get it where you want it to go, in terms of shifts in the earth. So there's some dangers associated with that, but I'm convinced that that's probably a better deal than the nuclear way. But I don't know enough about the technology on that, and it hasn't developed nearly as much as the solar energy way. I guess what I'm saying is that there are a number of alternatives, all of which need to be explored. And the safest, cleanest, that seems to have no problems involved with it, is solar energy. And the risks are so, I don't know what the risks are. There is a possibility that if you absorb the heat in an area and it wasn't reflected, it would change the climate of that area and cause more rain. I'm just repeating what I read. But that's the only thing that I've run into with the question of solar energy.
That'd be good for everyone.
Beg pardon?
That would be good for everyone.
Right.
That would be good, huh? Going down.
So, I guess if I were in power, I would pour a lot of money into the development of solar, and I established conservation programs, moratorium on nuclear energy, power plants, and developed solar energy. I'd also developed this, the use of organic waste. Seems to me we got a problem dealing with our refuse, and we might just as well use that.
I worked for about 6 months on the committee trying to rewrite some land use laws in the state, and became very frustrated, I guess. And going back to maybe something I said the other day, but a question is, how do you make this palatable? I guess I'm cynical enough to point to people that are in the legislature and the Congress right now, don't move until you jab them somehow, either through Vietnam-type demonstrations or until you get the power to block movement. And how do you do this? How do you make it palatable, attractive, other than just somebody saying, you know, 25 years from now we're going to have a problem? It doesn't move those people, other than the political process of voting the right type of people in.
How do we
motivate them?
The practical steps involved.
So you've given us the logic of the policy. What's the policy?
Well, the politics of it is just like the freedom movement or Vietnam or anything else. One has to develop an organization. One has to develop the literature, the ideology, the rationale, the program, and then one has to, it's like this guy from Shell Oil. Shell Oil provided that speech for me. And it was a PR operation. And everything, he's been dealt with by speech experts and everything else. So that he provided you with a program. And we would have to have the same kind of public movement, establishment of a public that Vietnam did establish on this issue. And that's no little task. But there are groups. If you read Critical Mass and you read in the newspapers now, people are occupying sites and doing all kinds of things. There is a beginning of a movement. Now, I think it has to be educated, and I think it has to develop itself, but I don't see why it can't be done if people think it's important.
Would the petroleum people be at all interested in anything like this, with their sense of the petroleum and that?
I don't know.
Are there groups?
I think they should be interested in it.
Are there places in the economic center
The problem with the petroleum people is that they take a free private enterprise line, and he took the same line yesterday, and every conversation I've yet been involved in with it, he soon gets off on that kind of attack. Now my strategy is to take energy and to go into the issues before you get involved in how you're going to do it. That's why I really stay off the political as long as I can. I want to take people into where they got to ask, how does the market system handle this problem? How does the free private enterprise handle it? What's the possibility? Now that would be one technique of having several different ways of handling it and just deal with it and get people involved in the problem. You know, you'd have to do all kinds of things like this to make it practical. I could write a practical program for it, and I will be eventually involved in the organization, strategy, tactics. My theory is there's no meaning to having ideas and having values and programs you think ought to be instituted if you don't have organization, strategy, tactics. And so that's involved.
If you really want to be the policy, not from feasibility, but from some other terms. More, you want the values more directly engaged in the formulation of policy.
Yeah, I think, however, that this is not, I will get in the next session to some fundamental values that I think are involved in our culture, which would go in the same direction. This is all self-interest, I think. This is only, it may be a little, the self may be a little extended to think about the future of the country and so forth, but there's a sense in which it's survival, it's order.
When is it ultimately pragmatic?
No, it's a combination. But thus far, I've really been arguing on a kind of pragmatic basis, although when I appealed to the universalization of our style of life, it was not a pragmatic. That was a meaning. It wasn't... See, we could have our style of life and say, the hell with the rest of the world, and to a certain extent, we can go along with that. I think we're less and less able to do that, pragmatically. namely the OPEC countries are saying you're not going to get the oil, the uranium countries are going to get together and say you're not going to get the uranium. But in the short run, it seems to me, we could go ahead with our present historical growth pattern and with nuclear power and not face. To be sure, there may be an accident. You don't know what history will produce. Nobody would have predicted Hitler. Nobody would have predicted Vietnam. You know, there are things that emerge. So
is the appeal to the long run a different kind of argument, or a better, a more persuasive form?
I think it's a different kind of argument. It involves a different conception of the self. I always begin in thinking about this with the nature of the self that you're living with. Now, there are selves who are concerned more with themselves and their power and their immediate circumstances and materials and with their immediate friends or relatives, maybe. And then there are other selves, for some strange reason, that move out to other kinds of interests. So I think you've got to make your appeal on various grounds. I think you make it on multiple grounds.
On survival in terms of a richer meaning, a richer conception of life or self. What are the others you see?
Well, I think you can put it on your own personal survival. I think then and your own future, then I think you can put it on a kind of national basis in terms of the politics of the world that are developing, the kind of thing Heilbronner does, which says you're going to get into a situation where this country is going to be involved in all kinds of international relations, which won't work out if you don't do something else. I mean, you've got all kinds of levels, and people will be appealed to by the kind of national interest. You've got a personal interest. You can have maybe you could you suggested we go to the energy industry, and I'm not against that. I've argued in the city of Chicago with the powers that be that their self-interest was the development of black power. Really, their self-interest was it. I went to them in Iowa. They have very hard for them to accept that, but it's the way you argue, and I think you've got to argue. And then you can argue from the point of view of people who look at the meaning structure of life. And that's what I call a religious foundation. Now, a religious foundation might take it simply to a concern for the whole population of the world. I have three kind of basic interpretation. One is a kind of market which comes out of a self-interest theory. And the other is a global family which comes out of a concern for the world. And the third is a global world, what I call a global world or global meaning, which has to do with something more than just a global family. Because you can take the global family and wish for everybody in the world what you had. But then I think it's a question of the meaning of all of us. There are really three broad different interpretations. I've written an article on this in which I used that to try to see how each one of these would deal with the issue. Now, I think on a global market basis, taking into account the self-interest of the United States vis-a-vis the OPEC countries and so forth, you can argue for some direction. You can get some mileage. You can get some real mileage. And I think that you could argue for a conservation program with this country on the basis of its ability to survive vis-a-vis the OPEC countries and on the basis of dependency. We can't afford to be dependent, and so a conservation program reduces our dependency. That's the way you would argue, seems to me, with some people. Certainly, I would argue that with the America Firsters and all that kind of a group that we've got it. And they are taking that line. They recognize that line, and the fellow from Shell Oil recognized that line. So you argue that for them. That isn't my position. I think that's important, but that isn't what I come out of. I think I'd be for the reduction of energy, whether or not we had a shortage of why we're using it.
How do you explain or justify conservation to one means, which is increased cost, I guess, of taxing or whatever, to the emerging poor, or if you want, I don't want to say the black, or the Puerto Ricans, or the American Indian, or any one group, the group that are trying to come up to where we are. How do you justify?
You can't. I don't think you can. And I say that because my general line is the meaning structure, and it's society organized around consumption and psychological obsolescence and all kinds of devices to get us to buy things and expend energies on things that are really kind of useless, except maybe psychically. Useless, that's not it. But very, very meaningful, but meaningful, I think, in very demonic ways, very destructive ways. Well, if you talk to a black or a woman about that, I don't think you get very far. Women maybe more than blacks. And I've tried it with blacks. Tried it right in this room with Jim Cohn. When we had four blacks on the faculty, we never had them back because they couldn't handle them. Just couldn't handle it. The threat they were to our whole being. But they can't see it, so that it's like arguing birth control with the blacks. They're not going to accept it because they see it as genocide. I mean, their survival in this country depends upon getting a bigger and bigger share population-wise, therefore power-wise, therefore you got to take them seriously as persons. So that isn't the group. You've got to calculate then in your approach to any issue, it seems to me. Where's the public? Where can a public be formed? How can you frame an issue? Now, you would really have to take them into account. That's why the second element in the Ford Report is a whole series of services and programs to deal with the low-income groups. And you couldn't sell this program unless you really emphasize that, because this will affect adversely in a much greater extent the lower income groups and higher income groups. I guess that's obvious, it will, but it will, because energy is so basic in our culture. It's just bottom level. And it's like food. You like food. So I would think that I would hopefully think that the churches would be the kind of a group whose ethos and ideology at least establishes a sense of duty, even if it isn't felt, to take the rest of the world into account and to take the future into account. We have that ideology. It's just all true. Everything you sing and everything you hear is through it. Now the question is to tie up that general direction and concern very concretely with a program. And if we don't tie it up with a program, and with an intelligent program, it gets tied up with all other kinds of things. I think that's been a problem in our churches, is that we haven't really been able as church groups to attend to these things. And it's not a simple thing, because I've worked for years with church groups, and a lot of people have to attend to it. And you've got to give time and energy to attend to it. So we tried it on race. We did it on Vietnam. I don't think we got too far with race, but we don't know where we got. We did it. We could do it on energy, if we could. And I think there'd be a lot of, there could be some side effects. I don't know. I thought the race issue might raise the cultural problem. I don't think it did. And I think the reason it didn't was because the people, the blacks were not in a position to deal with that issue. But I think that maybe we could find people who can do it. Well, time for lunch.